This is the Senate Criminal Law and Procedure Committee, Wednesday, March 17, 1971, 3 p.m., Room 215, State Capitol. Today's agenda, Senate Bill 40, Articles 28 and 29.
Come to order. First of all, the members of the President. Take up Article 28. Here it is.
President, directing the Don Surratt Project Director of Criminal Law Relations Commission. Later, we will be discussing Articles 28 and 29 of Senate Bill 40. Article 28 will begin on page 249 and final draft on the floor of this motion. And page 95. Under the broad classification of the code, these are classified under offenses against public health and safety. Article 28 deals with prosecution on related offenses. Under section 249, we have four definitions which we define as means throughout the prosecution article. Find the term place of prostitution, prostitution enterprise, and sexual conduct. Two significant departures from the existing law will be found in this article as a result of this definition, among which are used in the section section. The proposed law. These reports define it to give encompass both male and female prostitutes, and which prohibit not only the traditional normal sexual conduct or sexual intercourse, but devious sexual intercourse as well. Section 250 refers to the substantive offense defined by this article. Prohibits the crime of prostitution, and it's defined very simply in that a person commits the crime of prostitution if he engages in or offers or agrees to engage in sexual conduct in return for a fee. Notice the pronoun he includes the South Florida instruction that he includes also and neither. Requirement here is an intent to promote prostitution. We have several different types of activity here. If the intent I mentioned, the person owns, controls, manages, supervises, or otherwise maintains the place of prostitution or a prostitute enterprise, or induces or causes the person to engage in prostitution, or to remain in a place of prostitution, or receives the money from prostitution, or a prostitute enterprise, or engages in any conduct that either institutes or facilitates or anybody in prostitution. This is looked upon as a more serious offense by the commission, as it is presently under existing law and is classified under our code as a Class C felony and is punishable by a maximum imprisonment of 5 years in penitentiary. Section 252 is again a prostitution type of offense. It is the most serious crime in the prostitution article. It is characterized as compelling prostitution and is intended to get at three forms of promoted prostitution that we considered were an aggravated nature. And as a consequence, includes seriousness of the offense, as well as the penalty. Here we talk about the use of force or intimidation to compel another to engage in prostitution, or under paragraph D, induces or causes a person of 18 years of age to engage in prostitution. Here again, this is consistent with the general objective of the commission throughout this code to concentrate on the possession of minors. Paragraph C induces or causes the spouse, child, or stepchild to engage in prostitution. This crime is classified as a Class B felony and is punishable by 10 years in prison. You'll notice that the code, as existing law, does not prohibit patronizing a prostitute. I did call the attention, however, as you had mentioned in the commentary under the Article 6 of the code, the Court Crimes article, which sets out the crime of solicitation. In applying that test, applying that to the crime of prostitution, you can see that as an in-court crime, soliciting a prostitute would become a criminal offense under this code.
The reference to this story is something you need to
read.
The thing is that the really next to the
so, well, we're talking in this sense, in more prostitution, we're talking about a customer, or probably more precisely the prospect of a customer, that we saw no reason to be extended to this given the crime of prostitution from the list of the person to any other crime, and that is why we were covered generally under the Court Crimes article and making a solicitation for somebody's offense itself.
I guess what I'm asking the defendant is, will anybody know this? At this point, who is this person? And this person is a looker who has been fighting this time. And they're not being a person.
Well, Senator, the only thing I can say to that is that one of the primary purposes of writing this is a comprehensive code is to make it all fit together and to make it apply as an interrelated structure. And whoever is in charge with the administering or enforcing the criminal laws, I would certainly hope very important part of the story, and the article that the court finds article covered not only the way the state, but also the crime of attempt, and also conspiracy. I certainly don't think that is any problem in that far as indicating that solicitation and prosecution.
Under the inquiry time part, you'll say the customer has to be facing their costs. And that's the problem. But if it comes to the court to get the costs, that's not the
problem. It is not a crime to take the money from the customer. It is not a crime to take the money from the customer. Section 253. Requires corroboration under section 251 and 252. We provide that no person shall be convicted solely on the uncorroborated testimony of the person whose prosecution is alleged to have promoted what he tells. ORS 167 140 is considered. American law and the kind of formulation on it. all persons of honor that you may have been defined, for example, contemporary community standards related to the depiction or representation. essential matters, and two, the material is utterly without redeeming social value. These three criteria, either expressly or by statute or by judicial construction, have been considered necessary to protect any restriction that a state may try to impose on the dissemination of obscene material. Obscenity, pornography, whatever label you could put on it, as traditionally presented to courts, legislatures, and law enforcement generally, is extremely, if not an insoluble task. Extremely difficult, if not insoluble. What we've attempted to do here is get away from these words, such as period entry, temporary standards, and use of language that is so obscure as to be almost unenforceable and unintelligible, and varies so much from case to case that it's difficult to know. It's difficult as far as the person who are in business of selling books or exhibiting movies or engaging in other activity that may, under the Ross criteria, be considered obscene. Well, our existing statute, ORS 167.151, as I mentioned, was an attempt to codify the Ross Act. In November of 1970, the U.S. District Court of Oregon held that this statute was unconstitutional on its face. This case is on appeal now. What the ultimate decision will be, is unknown at this time. The rationale that the United States District Court held and used for its holding that case was that the statute prohibits the dissemination of obscene material under all circumstances, regardless of how or to whom the material is distributed. Therefore, it is overbroad and offends the constitutional guarantees of free speech and free press. The commission, in examining the long line of cases from the Supreme Court, particularly the Redrick case, which is cited in the commentary, felt that there really wasn't too much left insofar as areas where it could be argued that the state has a legitimate interest in attempting to control the flow of certain materials. As a consequence, we look to a proposed statute drafted by an eminent prosecutor, Richard Hugh, former New York State prosecutor, generally recognized as one of the outstanding experts in the country in the area of obscenity, and he would have undoubtedly prosecuted more obscenity cases than any other prosecutor in the country. We were impressed by his approach to the problem, and that is to get away from the language that no two judges have been able to agree upon, and to attempt to formulate an obscenity statute along the same lines as you try to draft on any other criminal statute. And that is to be as precise as possible, to be as fair as possible in giving notice what kind of conduct is prohibited and what kind of conduct is not prohibited. And also, in taking cognizance of the Redrick case and the other Supreme Court opinion, feeling that there were only really three areas left in which the state could say it had a legitimate interest in trying to control the flow of certain materials. Now, when I say regular police, for the record, this is regular police New York, cited in 386 U.S. 767 in 1967. Nowhere in this article consistent with the family work story that was held in their possession of obscene material, even though the material under the rock test may be exceedingly obscene, that their possession of such material by an adult cannot be prohibited constitutionally. We provide under section 260 certain defenses, two constitutions under these sections. These are affirmative defenses, and under our definition of an affirmative defense, of course, the burden would be on the defendant to establish the defense by a preponderance of the evidence. The defenses are, one, that the defendant was in a parental or guardianship relationship with a minor, or that the defendant was a bona fide school, museum, or public library, or was acting in this capacity as an employee of such organization, or of a retail outlet affiliated with serving the educational purpose of such organization, or that the defendant was charged with the sale, storing, or display of an item, those portions of which might otherwise be contraband under our definitions of obscenity, forming merely an incidental part of an otherwise non-offending whole, and serving some legitimate purpose therein other than titillation. Now, there are no comparable provisions in existing law with respect to these offenses, and the commission felt that prosecutions in these areas would be extremely unlikely, but for the protection of individuals who are legitimate human beings for educational purposes, or running a museum, or if it's a magazine, or a movie, and probably under some things, probably the area that needs the most explanation for me, because I think number one and two here on the section 260 are largely self-explanatory. Subsection 3 is intended to allow the sale, distribution, or display of magazines, books, films, etc., in which the offending items constitute only a minor part of it and serve some other legitimate purpose. Most of the currently popular news magazines and many of the films that are distributed under different ratings, for that matter, carry either pictures or words or language or some reference that might otherwise be considered offense under our definition. So we do provide for an affirmative defense here so that such materials would not be prohibited. Now, section 261, although it does not deal with minors, again, the commission felt, and this is consistent with the Cruz versus Van Hoomerson decision, this is consistent with the state's legitimate interest in protecting the public from assaults upon their individual privacy. And this provides, here we're talking about commercial displays, provides a person commits a crime of publicly displaying nudity or sex for advertising purposes. If he knowingly does certain things, you can see under A or B, displays publicly or causes to be displayed publicly a picture, photograph, drawing, sculpture, other visual representation or image of a person or portion of a human body that depicts nudity, fatal masochistic abuse, sexual conduct or sexual excitement, or any page, poster, or other written or printed matter bearing such representation, or a verbal description or narrative account of such items or activities, or any obscenity. Of course, all of this language in here has been defined explicitly under our definition section, or under paragraph B if you permit any display describing this section on premises owned, rented, or operated by him. Here again, the fine is classified as a plan for and in as much as minors are not involved here directly, the extraordinary fine is not authorized and has included under the plan that you have been currently signed. Or even presently has no comparable probation in the existing law, although we do have what's been referred to as the indictable nuisance statute, ORS 1061-210, which makes it a misdemeanor to willfully and wrongly commit any act which openly outrages the public decency and is injurious to public morals. A statute which probably would not hold up under a constitutional attack under that. We have attempted to be much more specific in our terminology. We can withstand the constitutional attack against statements. Section 262 provides a defense to the crime publicly displaying media or sex for advertising purposes. Again, it's an affirmative defense. The burden would be on the defendant to prove that the display, even though in connection with a commercial venture, was primarily for artistic purposes or as a public service, or that the public display was of nudity exhibited by a bona fide art, antique, or similar gallery or exhibition, and visible in a normal display setting. Makes himself certainly legitimate artistic display should not and probably would not ever be the subject of a criminal prosecution, but should it occur, the Sixth Section would provide a defense for the defendant. And one other thing I would like to touch on, Mr. Chairman, before I conclude my statement with respect to that chief article, and that is with respect to the request that the commission and the subcommittee had and considered at great length, and that is the question of whether a state is required to provide a prior adversary hearing and seek an injunction and a prior determination as to whether material is obtained as a matter of law before a criminal prosecution can be had. This area is still in the state of Florence in the Supreme Court. Senate Bill 92, which did not come out of committee the last session of the legislature, did provide for a civil remedy by injunction. The commission discussed this at great length, voted against this approach because we believe that the injunctive procedure would be too cumbersome and impractical to be effective, and it would impose an undue hardship and burden upon the state in each case to come in with every book or every film that it's intended to base the prosecution on and have a hearing and obtain an injunction and then require a violation of that injunction before any further proceedings could be had by the state. Also, the commission has some doubts about such a procedure and whether or not it was under the Oregon Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, to a prior restraint. We feel that this area is still unsettled, but we feel that the state should not have such a burden, particularly due to the fact that this article concentrates primarily on the protection of minors and the exploitation of minors in a commercial sense, although we do prohibit and use the broad verb furniture, which we prohibit other kinds of dissemination of obscene material. But we do feel that such a procedure should not be required as part of the obscenity article. There is a case now, Perez versus Ledesma, which has been argued recently. I believe it's argued by November. To my knowledge, Judge District Court for Eastern Louisiana held that arrests or seizures under the that state obscenity law could not be held without mandatory obscenity hearing. Now, this thing to note is the district court rendered this opinion to rely heavily on two cases. One, Marcus versus Church One in 1961 case, and the other case, Quantity of Books versus Kansas in 1964 case. Now, here, however, it should be noted that these cases involve civil matters rather than criminal procedures, and that the civil procedures in both of those cases were designed to prevent seizure and destruction of allegedly obscene material and were supplemental to the existing criminal statute. And I think there, and Candor, I think, could make an argument for the extraordinary protection of having a prior hearing for the determination as to what is going on to the material is not seen. There are two other cases I would like to mention. New York, City Company versus Leary, and Milky Way Productions versus Leary, two 1970 cases that were submitted to the Supreme Court. And on February 27, 1970, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of a ruling by the United States District Court for Southern New York. And that decision was in. And that was that the publishers who have apparently approached hardcore pornography are not entitled to federal injunctive relief against arrest and prosecution for distribution of this material. And that the New York revised penal law was not unconstitutional. And that the district court specifically held in that case that the First Amendment would require an adversary hearing on the issue of obscenity material can be seized. This was in 1970. Both of those cases were affirmed by the United States Supreme Court. I have no other comments to make, Mr. Chairman, with respect to the obscenity argument.
Any questions? Ready? Not, thank you, John. Why don't you stay at that part of the table? Mr. Ike Bay.
Good afternoon, I'm Mike Page, President of the Oregon Periodical Distributors Association. Obscenity is a hot potato issue that causes problems whenever laws are formulated or administered. The Oregon Periodical Distributors Association welcomes this chance to appear before this committee and present our point of view and hope that we can help you with your difficult task. Recent studies on the federal level dealing with pornography and its effects, and the legalization of pornography in several Scandinavian countries have given us reason to believe the harmful effects of this material is questionable. The findings of the President's Commission have proved highly controversial, and legalization of pornography in Sweden has almost killed a once highly profitable industry. In February of this year, Oregon current obscenity law was given a revival by the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Hugo Black feels that the states are to be left to handle this matter in their own separate ways. The direct quote is part of the attached article in the Capitol Journal. What do we go from here? The position of wholesalers in general must be understood before you can understand our concern and motivation before appearing before you. Among the enclosures, you will find a hold harmless agreement, which I offer to you as an example of a wholesaler retail relationship. Should a state pass a new obscenity law, the vast majority of retailers in this state will, in some appropriate manner, notify their periodical wholesalers to make sure that no printed material will be sent into the store that will cause the retailer to be open to any prosecution. We hope you clearly understand that the responsibility for whatever standards you set will fall on us as wholesalers and not be borne by our customers. In all fairness, it must be pointed out that the vast majority of retailers in this state are exercising control over the types of magazines and paperback books sold in their stores. I refrain from listing specific examples for fear of condemning by omission, but I assure you that these efforts are widespread and generally effective. Wholesalers have also carried out this program of informal self-policing, as the best example by the enclosed letter to the District Attorney of Washington County and all other district attorneys we serve from Mr. Norman Bay of the Bay News Company, Portland, Oregon. Similar letters have been sent by other wholesalers throughout the state. The intent to cooperate fully is clearly evident in this letter. It is with this intent that we appear before you to discuss Article 29 of Senate Bill 40, obscenity-related offenses. In the opinion of the Oregon Periodical Distributors Association, that Article 29 of Senate Bill 40 places us in an impossible position and threatens the future of our business. Before you become alarmed, please be assured that our association supports fully the concept behind the bill. That differs greatly with the proposed procedure for effecting the necessary control on public material available to minors in this state. Allow me to itemize several points for your consideration. Number one, magazine wholesalers represented by this association distribute, on an average, almost 200 magazine titles per week and over 350 paperback book titles per month. It is impossible for us to read and evaluate this vast amount of material. Two, as trained businessmen, we are poorly prepared to render the decisions necessary to properly evaluate the material passing through our shop. Our main objection to Article 29 centers around the defense in subsection number 3. The defendant was charged with the sale, showing, or display of an item whose portions of which might otherwise be contraband, forming merely an incidental part of an otherwise non-offending whole, and serving some legitimate purpose therein other than titillation. One paragraph opens a Pandora's box of ambiguity and interpretation and causes judgment by even the most competent difficult. If you interpret that to mean the counting of pages in a book, determining on each page if either in words or pictorial content it was acceptable or not acceptable, and if more than 50% of the pages were acceptable, turning into a playboy would be completely acceptable as literature for minors. The next issue of playboy might have a completely different context structure, and this would require us to read every issue of every kind. If we were to represent the available material on a horizontal color spectrum, it would appear as a broad horizontal line moving from jet black, representing the hardcore pornography, down through successive shades of gray to off-white to pure white. Across this line, we have to place a line of separation to represent the effective legislation. In the case of obscenity, this can get down to the finest of sweat hair. The closer we get to this dividing line, the more difficult value judgments become. The above quoted subject makes it very difficult to fix the position of this dividing line. The position of the line will vary greatly with the interpretation of what constitutes a non-offensive hold. On the other side, On one side, we have material that can be legally stolen from miners. On the other, we have illegal material that can bring legal action if stolen. Should a wholesaler's judgment differ with local law enforcement, the retailer wins a trip to jail, an indictment, and a devastating amount of adverse publicity. There will never be enough money in magazines for the reputable businessman to offset this publicity. Even an unsuccessful prosecution would result, in our opinion, in a large-scale cancellation of magazine and book sections in the food market for this state. These things depend solely on the housewives of the customer who cannot afford to offend them. There is a class of retailers usually referred to as quote adult bookstores, unquote, or quote downtown smoke shops, unquote, that seem to thrive on this publicity. These retailers usually have the common sense to keep minors out of their premises. Section 259 would limit the magazines and books in any retail establishment which has regular juvenile traffic to just those titles which are legally saleable to minors. This returns us to our problem of evaluation. Section 258, subsections 2 and 3, free from prosecution the employees of motion picture theaters. The same logic should hold true for the employees of retail stores. Section 260, subsection 2, allows for obscenity material to change as the location of the change. Material available in a school library may open a retailer for action if it is sold outside the school environment. You find that one of the profitable sidelines of paperback book sales in schools are students going out into communities to buy identical texts that are provided by the school system, texts that they can keep notes in, mark up, and use at their wish, also adding to their private library. Our association has caused to be drafted an amendment to Article 29, which we hope you will give your careful consideration. The main intent of this bill is to place the responsibility for judgments of obscenity in the courts where we feel they belong. You will please note that nowhere in this presentation do we become involved in the definition of obscenity standards. The responsibility for defining the community standards for this state is solely yours and the court. Our concern lies only in the enforcement end of this problem. We hope that you will accept a procedure that will eliminate obscenity prosecutions from the harassment and grandstanding that has surrounded them in the past. We hope our amendment will allow this state to activate the standards you select in a quiet, efficient manner whenever the need arises, and not just in election year. Mr. Paulette went to some extent listing the difficulties for the court, the state, and everybody in making judgments in the whole problem of obscenity and printed materials and deliberation of things. And as a businessman, myself and members of our association, we haven't got the time, we haven't got the money, and we haven't got the talent to do the job that should be done. We agree that there is a need, but we would like to see some manner of effective where it's taken out of our hands and into some more competent authority. Thank you.
Any questions? Senator
Clark. So how do you mean that they're taken out of your hands and into competent authority? You're sitting in court.
Yes.
And you don't have the time, but you're suggesting the courts have the time to read 200 books a week and make the same value judgment? How is this going to work? Keeping your problem, transferring it over to Maine County, we have four circuit judges, and the dockets are pretty full right now. How do they make the decision?
I would assume that it was someone stemming from a complaint. From a businessman standpoint, it would, as I interpret it, require me to hire a man of the ability of a circuit court judge to sit in my shop and read all this material. When we get in the area of community standards, we've really got problems. We've got a state community standard, a community standard in Minnesota, the same as it is in Portland, the same as it is in Salem, the same as it is in Corvallis.
I understand the problem. I think we both understand the problem, but I'm interested in the the concept of the court. I make all the determinations for everybody, you know, leave the court.
Well, I would grant that it's a highly complex problem. And we feel it probably actually will come from complaints rather than view of all material available in the community.
Well, is there any, in other words, we have to take it book by book. We have to, for instance, the complaint has been lodged against the Playboy for March. And by the time that was litigated, then we wouldn't know about the Playboy for April, would we?
No.
And then the complaint against the Playboy for April.
By the same token, if I may ask a question, how would you interpret that non-offensive hold? What is a non-offensive hold to you and a non-offensive hold to me may differ?
Oh, yes. We don't disagree on the difficult aspect of trying to make a decision. I think that for the mayor, you know, he's making a decision. I think that's the only point I'm talking to.
I suppose there was good performance function. If there was some place you could go hire a at a reasonable price. But to get that kind of a mind, you need to go college professor rank or
something
Legal rank. Yeah, if you talk to a college professor, nothing does change. If you talk to a district attorney, their opinions seem to differ with the community in which they're located.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Dwayne Hember.
Definitely not to follow by the actual study that
entire population to be stable. However, we have established a certain code of ethics. There are certain lines of magazines and books being published and sold by a few of the so-called agricultural bookstores types of authors. None of this type of merchandise has been sold or distributed by the Oregon Holdings. We have all refused to have the gentleman with the black and the hardcore we have to say, we would like very much to have a practical legal guidance to do this. And it is our hope that the proposal we will present to you today will be for the benefit of all. To illustrate our concern, this possible, the word possible, unjustifiable action or harassment under your proposal. Allow me to present a hypothetical case of John Jones. John Jones is a senior in high school. He's an artist. And he was 17 years and 10 months old. On a Saturday morning, John goes down to the art store and buys some paper. And he takes a back copy of an art book and taking reproductions of the works of one of the world's most famous artists, Keith. It is this copy. Call your attention to the cover and to the illustration of number 31 and number 47. Under your proposed legislation, this artist and his person are subject to criminal arrest for selling obscene literature to the public. John then goes to a barbershop. This barbershop, like most others, has a few magazines on their table for the customers to look at while they work for themselves. My little gentleman is a piece for them. In this shop, there is a copy of Sunday. It is this copy. I refer you to the Sunday. Once again, this part of the Sunday was explaining and turning obscene material to a man. John then stopped at an inn. And he buys a copy of Life magazine. This copy. I refer you to page 20. Again, store manager and or clerk is subject to criminal arrest for selling an obscene magazine for the money. John's last stop is at his dentist. Once the magazine in the waiting room of the dentist's office, he visited the National Geographic. John picks up and looks through a copy of the National Geographic. This copy, I'm bringing you to page number 691. As before, this dentist is subject to arrest for displaying and printing obscene material of the human. We realize that this unrealistic, type of confused interpretation is possible for that. It's definitely not very beneficial. But under given circumstances, it's very easy to have. You sincerely agree with what you will propose. There's a simple solution for all these. It is equitable, fair, and workable for all concerned parties. We do not ask you to change the proposed legislation in any way. We only ask to supplement the legislation with the addition of the injustice procedure, which makes the first step of enforcement as a civil action against the material. This will clear up the air and establish a definite rule. Then, any violation of the injunctive rule will automatically be a definite clear-cut reason for automatic criminal action. This type of injunctive proceedings has already been included in the obscenity laws of 26 states. It seems to be working well in the states of that. And we believe it can be just as effective in the state of America. Mr. Anstead will present our proposal in more detail. This type of injustice proceedings is not new to the state of Oregon. 10 years ago, the state legislator appointed an interim committee to study and recommend needed changes in the Oregon criminal code, including the law on offense. The committee held public hearings and meetings throughout the state, and in November of 1960, committed to the governor in the 51st legislature their report and their recommendations. In close, allow me to quote from the summary report on the law on the table. This is one of your official copies of the summary. There is a conflict between the state's duty to help maintain an environment allowing youth to write near a wholesome youthful state. And the restrictions placed upon state activities and fields involving the First and Fourteenth Amendment. A workable and constitutional law that gives them certain materials to furnish children with necessary and possible. The committee recommends the procedures involving the civil procedure. legal term that digitally informed every one of our meetings via mail. That instructions that have been issued, that we recommend it, will be immediately removed from his hands, the offending title. We will instruct our personnel to serve it on the next triple, the rules on all communities, everything that the dealer has, providing the dealer with permission to do.
Yes. What if we then said you do pull a line that you somehow determine without the intervention of the court to be, in other words, you made the initial determination on the hard court.
Black and the black and the black and
the black. What if the law were written as you say here, but the injunction would be a permanent injunction, and some constitutional question or the permanent censorship.
All right.
But what I'm worried about is Mr. Bay is that you're supposedly find that that issue of life is in the black side. Who's to say about the next issue?
All right.
Of course, to you.
I can give you my answer to the whole thing, and I think the answer is all over. Allow me to use two of those things. I will use my view. I assume that if by some pretext, an injunction was issued from this legal black side, that we would not refuse this to be on the subsequent of this time, I think it's going to be a matter of judgment, because this could be a thing. It would be a thing if an injunction was ever issued. Or again, then it comes back. Also, after the injunction is issued, the public is required to immediately come out and defend the fact. This is an application. We have 30 days. Now, getting into the dark field, and I would refer you to Imitation Defense, super magazine, super material, for editorial, for friends. You've all seen them, they're very clever, rather not. If an injunction is issued against one of those, then there are many, many, many. My guess is that a lot of public would never come out and defend this country. And as far as I'm, under an injunctive procedure, just may view that that public is not interested in defending this title, either the whole thing will no longer be true, but true. The next issue for the policy. Because I think practical application of the injunctive procedure is going to protect the legitimate news dealer and the legitimate type. What it is going to have, and this is what practically everybody wants, you know what I mean? What your concern is for the minor and for the hardcore is not the concern of life. The hardcore cannot is going to have trouble getting the trouble. Then you have a definite penalty in violation of the injunction. This is why I think it is simple enough, and I have no jurisdiction to the defense, but talk to them, and they all have the fear and take the place. This is going to be unnecessary, unnecessary work. This is the simple, I think this is the simplest, easiest, the most reasonable, and also the most effective method of eliminating from the newsstand and from the community what you and I think should be eliminated. Is that not your question?
Oh, well, it's just to the point, and it's just getting your feelings on it. I think we were probably, I think your answer, in my opinion, speaks better than the issue of the legal back. It's not the very obvious. When you're talking about the difference between the first edition and the second edition, then you have the time for the injunction and the time for the transforming project. But the difference between the March issue of Playboy and the April issue of Playboy, in terms of the district attorney will still be trying to consider whether or not March was good or bad, or no, because in April will be on the scene and no good detectors items before we start.
I know, not you, and you've never seen it. Sorry, it's against Playboy. even in the present thing. This is the thing. The thing what you do in this thing is not for nothing. It's not the intent. It has become, it's part of the human habit of the commitment. It's sitting in the mouth. That is the kind of thing that I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the black and the hardcore analysis, and also the process. Mr. Collette stated several times to me in comment. Or at least I got the sense that the laws were working so just to be made in his case. So that the German business operation could not be heard. Now, this would be normal, but there's six on the time. I have two. You ever ask them about the union? You could have been a government to the Supreme Court, or even break the statute. Because you declared unconstitutional certain courts, you declared unconstitutional states. The prosecution of the but the way it was handled, constituted deliberate harassment of magazine leaders, because of the district attorney, in my opinion, who was having up for re-election, kind of probably the getting re-elected in the district. But it turned out to be an arrest, rather than any constructive process of normal law. And this is a possible arrest. We would not expect it from 99% or 99% of the individuals connected in law enforcement. So we are asking for this defense. Not for ourselves, because we do not know. We're asking for it for our 1,800 dealers, for the groceries, the supermarkets, the drug stores, the neighborhood groceries, all the things. We have no way to find out, no way to know. What's my problem? That's right.
Any other questions? Out of curiosity, how? What's the percentage increase in Playboy in the last 5 years?
Playboy, I would say, in our agency from the time of the original concept about 10 years ago, perhaps, 500 copies up until today, 7,000 or 8,000, for instance. Also, I might add this. Playboy was a game of the happened. When Playboy first came out, very few things happened. Today, everybody does. And they want it. It is popular news. This is the
sort of curiosity is just a little remote in the Mr. Allen's front part of the answer. Does a grocer or a supermarket, does he have to see this pick a line? Every house in Rio, any other wholesaler can buy. Yeah, if he wants to buy. If he is cheap, if his personnel can supply us with a list of titles that he wants or doesn't. And we will definitely handle and follow that list. Now, in fact, here at our North Bay Touch Center, Lakeville Touch Center, the only account that out of our group that we have definitely are one or two major groups. They have a definite. The other, whether they be trained or individual, have told us, look, number, you know the type of thing you do not want. The black and the studies. So we say fine. We don't handle it anyway. Now then, what about magazines and the type of paper? And every guest that we get from concerned people say, yes, I will take Playboy in one or two of the better ones of that type. By better, he means better printing, better paper, better art. Because Playboy does have a great number of degrees. Some of the articles are very good. And by what he doesn't want, we'll be keeping the patients, but where the ones I told you a while ago, that other than the government, publicly didn't defend those themselves. Jimmy dropped in the house in this week. And in fact, we need to help.
Any other questions? No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramstead, are you going to bring on any additional testimony, or are you, or how long will it take you to offer these amendments? We have them here. For trying to save time, we've got to move.
Confidence in the future, and some between power and time. I know we got the right,
for the quarterback's door, but I don't know if there was anything Mr. Powers and they were going to come in better than anybody else that was working on team.
I think along the field this way, we have a case for the U.S. team, but in general, the matter of distance, for example, the determination of the city should not be left up to some administrative body. I think that that's a final determination for the
city. Well, I think that's a good
Mr. Ann said, I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to have to hurry on. I'd like to get into another thank you very much. Thank you. Now we'll go into the field of motion pictures. Mr. Williams. Recent 2 points.
Addressing myself first to Mr. Carson's statement about the condition of the power to determine obscenity, I just happened to find this morning in a recent United States Supreme Court decision a quotation from 13 New York Law Forum. 81, an article written in 1967. Whatever obscenity is, it is immeasurable as a crime and delineable only as a sin. As a sin, it is present only in the minds of some and is not in the minds of others. It is entirely too subjective for legal sanction. There are as many definitions of obscenity as there are men. And they are as unique to the individual as are their dreams. That's a quotation from.
Is that supposed to help me?
I just wanted to point out that it is a difficult thing. Difficult thing. A very difficult thing.
I think we know that already. We don't need any more testimony.
Now, I want to say first that this commission is to be commended on its general approach to this whole field here. You're focusing your thrust on the dissemination of the obscene material to minors. And you came to that conclusion paralleling and at the same time, at about the same time, the President's Committee on Obscenity and Pornography came to a similar conclusion. Now, with just one comment about the injunctive procedure that has been recommended by the periodical distributors. My people, of course, are in favor of it, but they're not going to fight, bleed, or die to get it. But they do appreciate the problem that the periodical distributors have. Ours is a little different. We have somebody at the door. The distributors have somebody at the door. They can admit or not admit a person under 18 years of age. But we do understand their concern. Incidentally, in this report, there is a proposed model act for an injunctive procedure. There's also a proposed model act for states relating to the same field of the dissemination of obscene materials to minors. It has one feature that I think we would like to see incorporated in yours, and that is as to the affirmative defenses.
The Model Act is recommended by the President's Commission as a definition of scienter. Does an offense is committed knowingly only if the defendant knew that the recipient of material was a young person, they use the phrase young person instead of minor, as herein defined, or had grounds to believe it probable that the recipient was a young person as herein defined, and failed to make reasonable inquiries to determine the age of the recipient. And if B, one, the defendant was aware of the contents of the material clearly within the definition of explicit sexual material, obscenity, from your definition, or had reason to know that the contents of the material were likely to fall within the definition, and failed to examine the material to ascertain its contents. Now, the President's Commission's draft would place the burden of proof of scienter upon the prosecution. I think that's where it ought to be. In addition, it has other affirmative defenses, including these. And I'd like to see these affirmative defenses added. That the dissemination was made with the intent of a parent or guardian of the recipient, that the defendant was misled as to the existence of parental consent by a misrepresentation of parent's parental status, or that the dissemination was made to the recipient by a teacher or clergyman in the discharge of official responsibilities, that the recipient was married, or that the defendant was misled in this regard by a misrepresentation of marital status. New York Act, from which Senate Bill 92 of the last session was passed, and which had already been repealed by the legislature in New York, and another act had been substituted for it, the trust of which is also the interdiction of the dissemination of the material of the minors, had affirmative defenses providing in substance like these, that the defendant had reasonable cause to believe that the minor involved was at least 18 years of age or over, and such minor exhibited to the defendant draft card, driver's license, birth certificate, or other official or apparently official documents supporting the establishment of such child was at least 18 years of age or over, or to such minor was accompanied by a person who was represented by the minor or who represented himself to be a parent, step-parent, spouse, or guardian of such minor, and the defendant in good faith relied upon such representation. We would like to see affirmative defenses like that spelled out. Also, I call your attention to section 2, In 258, the word exhibit is specifically used. And we would feel a little easier if it were added in section 260, subsection 3, on page 100 and line 22 of the bill. I'll talk about the bill now, not the report. If you were adding to the phrase sale, showing, or display, if you put in the word exhibition there, we'd feel a little better because it would show that one of the affirmative defenses there applied to motion pictures as well as to periodicals. That's the defense that where the defendant charges sale, showing, or display instead of an item, those portions of which might otherwise be contraband, for really an incidental part of an otherwise non-offending code, certain things for general purposes and other considerations. In that connection, I'm thinking of the two motion pictures, the pawnbroker, which is admittedly a work of art, and involved a very dramatic sequence where the little blouse is just completely somewhere, and both breath was closed, or the city of you that see Ryan's daughter the other night. You probably remember one scene where he, one of the paramount breaths was completely closed. For a short time, of course, but nevertheless, it wasn't closed. But what he said was in the definition of nudity, but we want to be sure it is clear that this affirmative defense set out in subsection 3 of 260 applies also to motion pictures in the old period. Now,
Senator Carson, you have a question?
Just out of curiosity, how are those two related? Ryan's daughter,
pawnbroker came out before the rate was distributed, before the rating system, as I recall. That was when you either got or didn't get a code C. But it did get a code C. Ryan's daughter was first rated by the Motion Picture Association as an R picture.
So what that means?
That means it's restricted. That means no one's admitted under the age for juveniles. In our state, it'd be under 18, unless accompanied by a parent or guardian. I met the old way to appeal that, and after a lot of halfway and a lot of arguing, we finally got it raised to a GP, which means parental. Exhibit can admit anybody, but parents are supposed to exercise some discretion as to whether or not they pay their kids. Now, the other thing to look at, whatever you refer, I'm a little concerned about the fine here. You go to a $10,000 fine, which is that's more than the fine for attempt to commit murder or treason, manslaughter, criminal negligent homicide, assault in the first or second degree, four times as much. Assault in the first or second degree, kidnapping, rape, sodomy, sexual abuse in the first degree theft, burglary, arson, robbery, first degree forgery, bigamy, incest, and child abandonment, bribery, perjury, or promoting and compelling prostitution. Now, it seems to me that that fine is a little high. Considering and disproportionate to the gravity of the offense, to the offense, particularly when you consider the ease of which any person might become a defendant by misjudging somebody's age. In section 177 of your bill, that's on page 69, you have a section for endangering the welfare of a minor. Now, seems to me, at least the first reading, the section 1A of that section might cover many of the specific offenses described in Article 49. And then by subsection 2, the particular offense is taken to the class A misdemeanor without any augmented provision for a fine. Now it may be that section 177 might be simple to view the scope of the obscenity article, but you've got two different standards there, and the same act could apparently be prosecuted under either of these sections. And you have different penalties, at least insofar as the fine is concerned. Now, that's just the whole way over point to you that you might want to prosecute the clip or not. I think you're to be commended for your courage and the basic overall approach here to confronting the problem. Obviously, the court has limited the area within which the state can legislate. But, and you said, okay, we're going to limit the children. It's a courageous approach, not one that will be popular with lots of people. But it was one that, it's a conclusion that was reached, as I said, independently by the president's committee. Now, I have one copy of the report published by the government printing office. That cost you $5.25. If you want to read one, it's a little less money. You get a little smaller print. You can get it from Mr. Bay's organization or Mr. Hembert's, maybe wholesale. But at retail, it costs you $1.65. It's a ban of books edition. The ban of books keeps the government printing office by about 4 months getting this out.
You know, if they set the size of the type, the two words, and we get them one to the other.
Apparently, the wording is the same, except that this one has a preface or an introduction by Clive Barnes, who is one of the better writers in the New York Times.
Any questions? John, do you have any questions? I don't.
You have a preemption provision in here insofar as prosecution of projectionists and archers and ticket sellers and doormen are concerned. But you don't have one as far as the whole field is concerned. And I'm sure these gentlemen back here, and I know my people, would not like to see the state get balkanized by municipal ordinances in this city, which would be different from the state law here. And I would like to see a preemption provision very similar to the one that's in the motor vehicle statute.
It's not working there anymore. Hope it works better than your suggestion it does the motor vehicle.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sol Mazel, is that the way you pronounce it? I want to caution you, if you have something new, that's
just
fine.
Just about 2 minutes.
All right.
Sol Mazel, Sol Enterprises, motion picture exhibitor. On your Article 29, we think it's a fine bill. We would like to have incorporated in it, however, some protection. We feel that it's necessary for you to give the theater management the authority to check IDs. We have many minors who come to the box office of our theaters and claim that they're over 18. We ask for ID and they say, we don't have to show you ID and we don't allow them in. Then they go home and tell their parents about it and we have a hassle with them. If we know, or if they know that we're checking IDs, any accidental mistake when someone might come into the theater through no fault of our own, the theater owner would not be found guilty as long as they know that we're making a concerted effort to keep minors out. And also, we need the authority to check the ID of parents who come and claim that their children are either over 18 or if they are, the parents of the minor. Sometimes they will come up and say, well, I'll vouch for him. This is my son. He's 19. We ask for ID and they just don't want to give it. We feel that it should be a misdemeanor to misrepresent their ages, saying that he's going into a tavern. And the burden of proof should be on the customer and not on the theater owner.
Any questions? Any questions?
The problem is, well, would you want us to, do we hook it into the rating that Mr. Williams and you're more familiar with than I, or?
Well,
when did you exercise this?
I think we're playing an X-rated film.
On X-rated film.
Well, this is the only rating that does not allow anyone under 18, even if they're with their parents. What you're running into is parents will come and bring their children and they say, well, I want my child to see this film. We tell them that they can't because of the rating, and the film says that no one under 18 can come in. Now, if it's tied into that, then that protects us from someone trying to ring in someone for a lawsuit.
Okay. Are many motion picture exhibitors doing what they're doing and asking for ideas?
Should be.
No, that's not my question.
I don't know if they are. I know we are.
Where are you?
We're very careful. Pardon?
Where are you?
In Portland.
Portland.
Well, I was wondering if the managers require the ID card, but if you could leave out the term affidavit, whatever you want there. I guess.
But I think that I deal with something that should be incorporated in there.
Thank you very much. Betty Adams.
In the street department, at least there's a sweeping new American morality. And there are simply that 5% who feel free to use any vulgarity in any company, and the 95% without the courage to shut them up. And so it strikes me real funny, and I imagine you people have seen it because you're now residents of Salem, about this new meat shop that we have that has opened as of Monday. And we have the businessmen's wives posing as models. And when we call our mayor and city council, they know nothing about it, only that they have read it in the newspaper. And it is up to us citizens to see that this type of thing is removed from this city, or otherwise the law cannot do anything. It's beyond the law. So now I want to tell you, we had a great deal today of the dangers of destroying a highly industrialized civilization by the pollution of our physical environment. That's poisoning the air, denuding the land, and contaminating the sea. And we are deeply concerned about it. But is this the only pollution that threatens? Have not civilizations also been choked or poisoned by moral pollution? Well, I argue that we all, both the ones who conserve old standards and the ones who want to overthrow them, should be open-minded in our approach to change, and none of us should insist that he alone knows what is best. I also suggest that all who engage in this debate need to remember at all times that the purpose of having rules enforced by society and of observing certain standards of conduct is to preserve a condition in which we can live congenially together in one community. The rules necessarily express a respect for one another's rights and beyond the question of rights for one another's feelings. Common sense is the hallmark of the English common law. The backbone and controlling forces of the community is to use the laws that are already on the books to curb the flow of pornography. Recent Supreme Court decisions have not overturned these laws. Certainly, all right-thinking adults are anxious to keep pornography out of the hands of juveniles. However, there is conclusive proof available in state legislation that this approach does not work. California and New York both have enacted legislation recently affecting sales of obscenity to juveniles. The New York law incorporates the concept which provides that the material be considered in relation to the audience to which it is aimed. It was under this concept that the United States Supreme Court upheld the conviction of Sam Ginsberg for selling girly magazines to a juvenile that he could have legally sold to an adult. The same law which prescribes sales to adults of material that should be judged obscene by the average person and so forth of an adult audience. California took the approach of setting up an entirely separate action of the penal code aimed specifically at the sales to juveniles while returning the section aimed at adults. It is obvious that New York City and California have not solved their obscenity problem. In no other state will you see more or more flagrant displays of pornography. There are several not so obvious but nevertheless logical reasons for this. And first of all, the emphasis on juvenile protection in the law has lulled the citizens and to a kind of complacent acceptance of pornography in the community as long as it is aimed at the adult market. This complacency has made it more difficult to organize effective community campaigns against obscenity which have been so common in the past. Even more convincing are my following arguments against juvenile obscenity laws. First, the emphasis on juvenile protection protects the producers of obscenity. By labeling their material adults only, they are free to load down hundreds of adults-only outlets and place the major burden of law enforcement at the retail level rather than at the relatively few production sources. And a second reason is the concept of juvenile protection has allowed adults-only smut shops to open in residential shopping areas throughout the state. These incredible outlets sell nothing but pornography, paperback books, picture magazines, still pictures, motion pictures, and so forth. And they even have display counters containing artificial sexual devices and so forth. Thus, the most perverse obscenity has been encouraged to move from the black market and back alleys of society into the legitimate outlets under the guise of adults only, which theoretically protects juveniles from such material. And in a recent survey among teenagers by a Madison Avenue advertising firm, they'd asked what sales slogan most attracts your attention. The one mentioned most frequently was adults only. Despite common misconceptions to the contrary, sales of obscenity to juveniles has never been a major problem. The emotional argument that portrays the pornographer as an orgy preying on children is just that, an emotional argument, not fact. The commercial pornographer aims his product at adults and does his best to avoid sales to juveniles. Juvenile names appear occasionally on mail order pornographer's list, but if it is, it's by accident, not by design. Such laws aimed at protecting juveniles from obscenity miss the target completely and actually play right into the hands of the pornographer by in effect legalizing obscenity for adults. The fact is that once obscenity is allowed to legally exist in the community, much of it will end up in the hands of young people. They obtain it in many ways, from their father's dresser drawer to the newspaper drives conducted by the Boy Scouts, to the pervert who purposely disposes of his pornography by the school grounds. It is impossible to protect juveniles from obscenity as long as it is legal for any segment of society to have it. Laws making sales to juveniles a crime are practically unenforceable. To my knowledge, there has never been one case filed in California under the new juvenile statute that was heralded so widely as a solution to the problem just last year. One reason is that very few sales are made to juveniles, as I've indicated before. Another reason is the understandable reluctance of parents to involve their child as a prosecution witness in an obscenity case. Law enforcement personnel and postal inspectors will confirm that it is virtually impossible to set up such a case. And fifth, the double standards implicit in juvenile legislation can only magnify the ever-widening generation gap. For adults to say, in effect, it's okay for us legally to read dirty books, view dirty films, or receive dirty mail, but not you kids, is a phony double standard that the law has never recognized in the past. If material is obscene for the test in the law, it must be obscene, period, or else we create more problems than we solve. So therefore, I recommend stricter enforcement of existing laws which have been consistently recognized as constitutional by the United States Supreme Court and which made it a criminal offense to produce, distribute, or sell obscenity to adults or juveniles. I am convinced that the Roth Elbert definitions of 1957, which represent the combined thinking of some of the greatest legal minds in this country, provide all the legal safeguards so essential for artistic or literary material, and yet enable the law to reach that which is utterly without redeeming social values. As incorporated in every state and federal law, the Rod Albert's definitions would prescribe that material which to the average person is best represented by a jury to decide what is legally obscene, applying to contemporary community standards. Certainly, material on the market today is below the standards of even Sodom and Gomorrah. Therefore, it is up to the citizens to speak out when they see evidence that their standards are being violated. As this assurance would be provided by the passage of the Durkin Bill, Senate Bill 1077, which would leave the factual determination of obscenity with the state courts to decide not subject to appeal beyond the state level. Under this legislation, all 50 states would no longer be forced to accept the standards of the lowest state in the union. It would also allow individual states to keep obscenity in other states outside their borders. This would hit the major pornographers, headquartered largely in Los Angeles County, right in the pocketbook, which is the most effective way to stop the obscenity problem. And I thank you kindly for this opportunity to testify before this committee.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Ms. Tangle.
I think this is a good law. With the objective set out in it, with one exception. Why are you making it a crime every place else? Or why it's been suggested that there will be $10,000 fines on everyone but the school? Why are we opening up the door widely to allow this into our schoolroom? They become an impermanent to the kids. All they have to do is prove they're at school and get in. And Mr. Bay made that quite clear when he stated what would be the illegal for him to sell outside, he could sell in his school library. This could become legal. We have enough problems now with the first education, with the books and the films being brought into schools without making it a legal thing. In that here we have what is called obscene performance that I'm reading down, and believe me, I don't enjoy reading this, which in whole or part depicts or reveals nudity or narrative accounts of sexual conduct. We drop down to what sexual conduct means, a narrative account that is human masturbation. We are showing the children these films now, gentlemen, in the school, and Boy the Man, they show exactly that. Now, I think it's a good law. It truly sets off all of these sources that our children who are constantly being bombarded from all sides, from films and books and from sex education materials in the school. And I would suggest that we take that school out of there, a bona fide school. A bona fide school doesn't ask for these types of things in it. A bona fide school teaches, has education, not stimulation in the schoolroom. And here is exactly what is happening. So I would suggest it would be our suggestion, and I am speaking for many parents throughout the state, that we remove the word bona fide school. Now, you would have to substitute one thing there. We do have people studying to be doctors, of course. You have anatomy courses. You have in biology. This is a legitimate reason. This doesn't actually, this comes under your drawing, of course. As far as the museums and the public route libraries, I believe that is a matter of choice. I can go to the museum or I don't have to. I can go to the public library or I don't have to, nor neither do my children. But when they are a captive audience in a schoolroom, there is a difference. And I know this, that should the distributors of these magazines and these movies and all the rest of this that is slowly bringing our children down into sex and drug-oriented little robots, should it happen that these men were men enough to stand up and say, we will accept no more of this material from the authors or the writers, they will clean it up, and then we will distribute the material to our outlets. And if the same thing was said, there wouldn't be a need for any X-rated films anymore. Because the movie industry would clear up quickly when the money, the profits were cut. And I believe firmly that the reason why the legislature does these types of things, why these laws are brought to the legislature, not because it's election time. We have enough problems without a bad at election time. But I believe that here the people know they can come. They cannot afford the courtrooms. Many people can't afford courtrooms. In fact, most can, to bring a charge against what is happening to their children. So they come to the only place they can, their elected representatives, the men who we look up to enforce some type of decency in this state, which is running completely amok. And I ask you, and I say this in all sincerity, please do not allow this into our schools, affirmative defense or no. We have enough of it in our schools. We are the parents who sit back and see what is happening to the children before a school board did anything else. What chance would we have before a school board with a law like this? We wouldn't have a chance. We don't now. But it would be completely gone then. So I would ask that you please take that out. As far as the museums, libraries, that's fine. I care nothing about that. I really, there are works of art, anatomy and a biology or a course for medical students is a crime. But don't put this rampantly to our schools. Because you see, we come to our legislature to try to get it stopped. The parents are going to stop it. We truly are. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from Ms. Spencer? I want to say for your benefit, Ms. Adams, and the future witnesses, if they have suggested amendments, we would like to have them nailed in writing or presented in writing.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you.
Gary Cook. I want to hold you to the same thing I said before, if it's repetitive. To state your case and go on to the next.
I won't take long. You said that if you had an amendment, you could write it out. I do not know this before I got here, but.
No, you can mail it in. You don't have to do it now.
Well, it's very brief, and I just wanted to answer in passing. I do have to take this comment. I'm a mother of five children, and the one is a fourth grade, fifth grade, junior, senior, and I'm also a writer who wants to write a book with a psychological research on a number of articles that appeared in August to do with family life, such as education, matters pertaining to school. I have also been a foster parent in the juvenile department. I have served about 75 of their children, so I feel that I am qualified to speak on the matter of children. In talking with psychological research at the Home Arts Library, he brought out a very interesting point about such materials as Playboy, Kitchen Even, and Life magazine, and perhaps some of the pictures that might appear in here. And that is that, and especially the school and school settings. But anyway, he said, for example, you can take a picture of a couple in sexual intercourse. And you can show it to a cow, not messing on a head, and the cow can tell it. But when you show it to a child, or an adult for that matter, there are degrees of sexual arousal in every case. You cannot bypass it. So if in the talk today we change the word obscenity to sexual arousal, we get a whole new picture of what is really happening. My son is not be the boy that he was talking about, 17 years old, and having a damn Saturday afternoon. He, of course, went to barbershop and yes, he does see Playboy. We do take the National Geographic, but if I don't like it, I've got my description. I have a great deal of control over what they do. This is true of not necessarily of life because they have theirs on the social sort of thing. This is what I object to. It's these men for the day who want to publish or distribute this material can fix their own guide. This is up to them for what they're doing. But I, as a mother, have rights too. I have the right, for example, to walk down the street as I have done when shopping with my children and not see hanging from the marquee or the education part of the movie these suggestive material. I have the right not to have my children being sexually aroused at every turn. For example, I have the right to call you to think, although it seems not by school, But when my son gets in his biology class at PBS as a sophomore, the teacher should not have sexually aroused him, maybe inadvertently, but he did this, by passing plastic replicas of male and female genitalia around and insisting that the children hold it. That's only one thing that's going on in school that I've suggested. I don't like it when my son goes down to a seemingly innocuous bookstore and finds there the assassin before. My son bought the book because he is a science fiction advocate, and it was certainly not on the cover to indicate this is anything other than science fiction. But when I took that grant through it because I try to take an interest in what my children do, I assure you it is filth from cover to cover. But it does not apparently come under the heading pornography because these gentlemen are just a prison. They don't have that in their little bookstore. Because I am a writer and my name is quite well known out in our county, I had a mother call me recently who had written an anonymous letter to the paper that she wanted to discuss it further with me. In her letter, she had blamed sex education as having a great deal to do with the fact that her 16-year-old daughter had been raped. She told me that there were 6 cases of rape out in her district alone. And she and I agree that this is again sexual arousal of the children. They are seeing too much of this stuff all over newsstands, wherever they build enough flies with it. People are making money off the moral deprivation of our children. And I am not going to stand idly by. I wonder with her, how many of these rape cases are there in direct result of increase in this material that is everywhere. My son went out to a little store that just opened up in Aurora. He took a field trip and told me, and he told me all about when he got back. He wasn't about to tell me what he heard before he went out there, but I'm sure that's why he went out there with some of his friends. Nobody asked him if he was 18. He described the type he saw out there. He said they sell marijuana and hash it types, but of course they don't sell marijuana or hash it, not real, of course. And one of these types apparently was in the symbol, I gathered from his description, it was a phallic symbol. He said that there were posters on the walls, and astrology posters he mentioned, that seemed very interesting for a child to see, or at least any child, I don't know, 17 or younger. He said, gee, but I didn't realize there were so many different ways to do something. He said, for every astrology sign, there was a different position. And you can imagine it was good work. I see these voyeurs standing outside these sex movies, a long line of them, that tell me they can't define obscenity while I'm a writer, and I guarantee you I could write to a story one of two ways. I can write it to be the prettiest, nicest, sweetest story you've ever seen, or I can write it to be the filthiest story you have ever read. And all I do is use words. Well, the people who are writing these materials are that the authors are the ones who should have the guidelines. They should use the same guidelines as do the news media. And we parents have a right not to be saturated on every side. I'm completely incapable of protecting my children from me, except that, of course, the TV shows I can turn off. Wherever I have a dealer and I see something that I don't like, I can tell the man. I don't want to send the news down. And if he's my neighborhood merchant and I am spending $200 a month in grocery money there, he will listen and listen fast. But I can't go to the barbershop with my son. I can't walk down the street all the time with him. I'm not with him every day. If you know and I know, there is too much, and they're doing it too fast and too soon. They're accelerating our children's emotional development, and I admit this is being done deliberately. I have a right to protect my children, and you are here to help me to protect my children and the other children of the community from attacks by boys who are going to get sexually stimulated watching movies. What are you going to do? Not about obscenity, gentlemen, but what are you going to do about sexual arousal? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Gabriel Avery.
This is by Kodosky, in case I have to use it. First of all, I would be very remiss if I didn't wish you a happy Saint Patrick's Day.
Thank you. Same to you, Amelia.
I'm sorry I don't have a prepared speech. I meant to have one very nicely made up to submit to you today because I know you like to have copies for your own information. However, I would like to just point out very briefly that 2 years ago on April 10th, 1969, I appeared before the Senate committee at that time who was studying taking pornography off of the newsstand in downtown Portland. And at that time, the district attorney, Mr. Van Humerson, appeared with a large manila envelope which was filled with pornographic material, which he says was just absolutely so horrible that he would wish them to look it over in the privacy of their chambers. Now, at that same hearing, there were many young people. There were very few of the older, shall I say, masonry types like myself. But that room was just crowded with young people. And what they said was this: they don't want pornography, they don't need pornography. Now, after the hearing, 7 weeks later, I contacted my legislator from Clackamas County and asked him what the stand was on this particular bill. Were they going to do anything to take the pornography out of the newsstand and the smoke shop, which at that time were readily available to minors? I am not concerned about adult men. If they want to get their kids down there at the bookshop or read Playboy, that's fine with me. But I want to keep this information out of the hands of the children, and that includes 18 years of age and younger. At the time, my senator said to me that there was really nothing that they could do in view of the confusion that was brought about by this Supreme Court ruling. This was his answer. So here I am 2 years later, making the same plea. Only this time, I'm asking you to keep pornography out of the school. And I ask you, gentlemen and ladies, doesn't this sound crazy? Aren't you ashamed of yourselves, sitting there in judgment, trying to decide what you're going to do with this Article 29, Section 2? This is the part that I am opposed to, is the Section 2 aspect, which has to do with the schools. Am I right?
But you haven't 16.
Section 260.
Right.
Article 2. Are we clear on this now?
I think that's the same
one.
Yeah,
the same one that we spoke about.
Now, I would like to know who needs pornography in the school. I would like to know who wants it. I don't believe it is the concerned parents who want it. I do not believe it is the dedicated teachers who want it. And I certainly know for a fact, having 14 ages of my own, that the confused young people certainly don't want it. Who then is it that wants the legalization of pornography in the schools? Is it Senator Uteri and his Criminal Law Revision Commission? Is it Mr. Payette and his group of people who have been expounding the great worth of all this for the past several weeks?
Well, wait a minute. I don't want to interrupt you. I don't think anybody has been expounding the worth of pornography in the school.
Well, sir, I would like to point out to you that what got me upset in the first place about this whole thing was the fact that a year ago I read in the newspaper, this ban on smut wins favor. And the fact that this came from the April 4th, 1970 Oregonian, and it listed all these different things. And then it says, at the bottom, schools, museums, and libraries would be exempt if they show such material to a minor for educational purposes. Now, I asked several of the legislators who it was that put this in, and I haven't found one yet who will admit to having done this. And I am just asking, who is responsible for having done this?
I
beg your pardon?
I have been support this question.
You do? Well, may I continue?
Yes.
I'll only take another few minutes. Now, I would like to supply you with a clue to what is going on. And I'm not actually making this a flat statement, but I am asking you to delve into this information for yourself and find out what is going on in the state of Oregon. Right now, at this very moment in this country, there is a group of pornographers and sexologists who call themselves the American Association of Sex Educators and Counselors. They are making ready at the present moment for their fourth annual Sex Institute, which will be taking place in the state of Missouri, April 15th to 18th. This group of people are the same people who were in the secret organization, of which I'm sure you have all heard about. Now, if I were to read to you the list of books and read to you some of the material which I have in here that have been written by these people, I could not make it into the local newspapers or on television. That is how disgraceful the whole thing is. Now what they're delving in is what they call erotic stimuli, because they're going to try to point out that the Commission on Obscenity and Pornography, you see, the minority report that was presented by Charles Keating, they are saying is all wrong, that it is perfectly possible to be sexually aroused and stimulated and not go out and commit any sexual crimes, and I have evidence to this to the contrary. Now, how does this tie in with what's going on in Oregon? Well, if you will look at your State of Oregon Comprehensive Health Plan on page 245, you will discover that as part of the method for bringing in this new far-out sex education program, and I am not referring to the sex education programs that we've had for 39 years, according to Lester Kirkendall, who was known as the granddaddy of sex education in the state of Oregon. This is the new sex program being promoted by Sex Information and Educational Council of the United States and the American Organization of Sex Educators and Counselors. There it is, right in the Comprehensive Health Plan. Now, Mr. Hamill, when he presented this plan to the governor several weeks ago, brought out the fact that fluoridation was the number one priority for this Comprehensive Health Plan. And what I would like to say right now is it seems that he's more interested in saving their teeth than he is in saving their souls. Now, many people oppose these evil things with every fiber of their being, but they just haven't got many fibers. They do not have the strength of their conviction. And that goes for many legislators down here in Salem, and I know because I've been talking to many of them. You disagree with all this evil, and yet you haven't got the guts to speak out against it. Otherwise, why would this particular section be included in this, trying to legalize pornography in the school? Many people are concerned with the pollution that's taking place in the state today, but how about the moral pollution that is taking place? Now, as you know, we are facing a moral degeneration, yet most people, including the liberal press and the uninformed politicians, won't admit it. The pornographers and sexologists, using the tools of freedom, free speech, free movement, and free press, are trying to destroy the moral strength of our youth. They swarm across the country like hawks, and they burrow deep into the framework of our society like termites. They mouth the same script and sing the same song. Mary Calderon says, "Sex is fun. No more thou shalt not." Dr. Kirkendall says, "Premarital sex is just great as long as you take the necessary precautions." It's all there, gentlemen, right here. Also, I have much more pornographic material at home, which I do not keep inside my home. I keep it behind the barn. I don't allow it into the barn because the animals have more sense than to use the perverted kind of sex that is being promoted by these kind of people. Now, these pornographers and sexologists never lack for fun. And I suggest that the moral decay could be largely stopped by merely enforcing the present laws. We do not need new laws, but office holders and administrators who will courageously enforce the laws that we have. If you pass this portion of the Senate bill, the parents of the state are going to fight you because we will alert them to the fact that you are trying to legalize pornography in the schools. And if you pass this bill, I suggest that you either be jailed or be hung. And if you pass this bill unwittingly, then you are fools and you shouldn't be allowed to run a self-service elevator. Oh, I know I shouldn't get emotional when I testify. I should be very composed and articulate and calm and rational. But when the parents are in danger of losing the children to the devil, I think the time has come for us to not be composed, articulate, calm, and rational. And I would like to close in saying this. St. Patrick was able to drive the snakes out of Ireland, and by golly, the parents of this state are going to drive the snakes out of the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Zaver, you were, I think you were here when Mr. Himber testified about the magazines you see before you.
That's right.
Assuming for the moment that they would be pornographic under our definition, which goes considerably further than present law,
right.
Then you, as I understand, you do not want Life or National Geographic, and I certainly would agree with on Playboy, and I don't know about Peter. But you, what you're saying is you don't want National Geographic in our schools. Is that, now, don't let me mislead you, but
right.
I
haven't looked at the pictures, so I don't know. But I do not consider to be pornography a picture of a woman breastfeeding her baby, or a picture of beautiful statues and sculptures from all over the world that have been famous for years and no one has ever gotten upset with. I do consider pornography, Life, Look, Playboy, and many of the other periodicals that come into some homes. They do not come into my home, but I suppose I would be considered a square, according to Senator Hoyt's description, because he's in favor of all this. But if pornography comes into the schools in this guise, and these magazines usually are pretty good, this one is particularly horrible. If I were to find my child reading this in the school, I would be terribly upset, because he does not read it at home. So I say, make this pornographic under your legal description, and let's take these people into court so that from now on there will be none of this stuff in what is usually considered to be a very good magazine. I say make a court case out of it, if it's in the school.
National Geographic or whatever it might be in.
Well, I don't think that really, usually there's pretty good stuff in here.
Well, I know, but
well, can I look at the picture?
I haven't even seen it, so turn to it. It should be where that rubber band is. I think that's not Mr. Henry Marston. I don't know if he's.
Are you expecting me to get upset about this?
Exactly.
Oh, well, I would not be upset about this, ladies and gentlemen. I think this is just a picture, the type of picture that we have seen of nude natives for many, many decades, and no one up until now has ever brought this up as being pornographic. Are there any other questions? May I suggest, if you don't mind, that if you would like a group of three or four of us to appear before you in private, we would like to do so in order to present to you the type of pornographic material that is being planned for our schools by the ASEP people. I could not do it in public the way I am doing now, but I think that it would be a good idea if we presented to you, perhaps in documented form, a lot of the things that are being written by these sexologists and pornographers who are now pushing their way into our schools. They are not educators. I cannot understand how this is going to happen, but I'm sure that it is, because I have been studying this for 2 years. And if you would invite us back in a couple of weeks, we would certainly like to do this for you. I know Senator Yuturi and Senator Carson have been very willing to speak to many of our people and have been very understanding of the fact that some of this stuff is coming into the school. And I think it would be for your enlightenment if you would allow us to come in and present pornography as it's being planned by the ASEC people and the CSEC people. I would ask you to consider this. Thank you.
This is Mayor.
So how much longer do you do?
Well, I'd like to finish this. We have two more, and I'm going to ask you to please make it short. This is a long time, but we have to keep this on schedule. Mrs. Vivian Mayola, I think she left. All right, then Daniel Seifer, is that pronounced right?
Yes, it is.
He's the last one.
I have a question. Mr. Chairman, the from the American Civil Liberties Union Board, which I have not distributed yet.
Well, it's not necessary to read the entire statement. In trying to conserve some time, if you have some brief remarks, we appreciate those. But We've got the committee here quite lengthy, and we want to hear everybody though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really only intended to make a few remarks. First of all, I think everyone knows what the traditional position of the American Civil Liberties Union has been on any regulation of speech and with the press. And I need not reiterate that history here. We have always maintained that it was not the function of government, whether state or federal, to tell any of those citizens in this section what ideas they might receive, what materials they might review, what they might discuss. I think that the courts have construed the Constitution of the United States in a manner which is consistent with this view, and I think that the experts in the field of sociologists and psychologists have lent great support to this view that such legislation is not only unwise and unconstitutional, but probably unnecessary. I would refer the committee only to the President's Commission report or to the experience that this state has had in November. Since November, there has been no enforceable statute in this state on the Senate. And I dare say that the only result has been that everyone has become quite bored with the entire subject. The American Civil Liberties Union feels that this bill, Article 29, is very important piece of legislation, and it's definitely a very progressive step in the right direction. We feel that it appropriately removes from the sanctions of the criminal law any attempt to regulate materials for adults. The union does feel that any regulation of the freedom of speech or the press is unwarranted, and accordingly, we could not wholeheartedly endorse even the provision here, which relates to juveniles. We feel that this is too broad. Nonetheless, because of the importance of the article and what it does not attempt to do, we would have to say that we think that this is a good bill and a good article. I do want to express our reservations, however, that the provisions related to juveniles are too broad and extend too far. And I say this for several reasons. First, I think the juveniles do have constitutional rights. Secondly, I think there's enormous pressure for sexually explicit materials of whatever quality on the part of all persons, particularly juveniles. And I think that a great deal of the market, if I can use the term loosely, that might exist among juvenile protective materials is really a result of the lack of any alternative type of materials within the school or within the home. And third, I don't believe, gentlemen, that the Article 29 as proposed really does eliminate any of the confusion that has arisen in the obscenity law in the past decade and a half. Rather, it's attempted to very broadly prescribe a large amount of material and has placed the questions of the legitimacy, the overall legitimacy of a given issue of a magazine, for instance, into the case of the defense rather than into the case of the state. But it hasn't really eliminated all of the very difficult areas. Accordingly, the statute is very subject or capable of abuse. It's as noted in the comments to the statute, that's a great deal of discretion in the prosecutor. This is fine, but I think prosecutors have an overburdened role, and for these reasons, I would recommend that the committee might want to limit the restrictions on material for juveniles to materials which should now be described as
First, I just read your statement. In the last paragraph, you refer to some possible amendments, and the reference is very general, I think. Would you care to write that, an amendment in terms of the first sentence of the last paragraph, which I before you say that to be rendered as suggested here above. And I think that would take the case not to do it now, but to be rendered too.
I don't have a prepared amendment. I think it would be possible and workable to simply have a law saying it shall be unlawful to pander obscenity to junkies. And I think that is a workable.
One other question, Ken.
Yes.
I don't really attempt to copy the numbers to suggest that it has a good people. I appreciate the views on that.
I was going to say from a copy of the copy of the expert.
You don't study it now, but if you want to send something
to
me,
you won't.
All right.
That's the first thing we learned.
Okay.
Any
questions? I want to thank everyone here for their patience. We went way past the time, but I think we got through this thing. We'll meet Friday morning, 8 o'clock, with hearings on the two bills. I forget which ones they are now. And then we'll meet Monday night at what was that, Chris? For just about 1 minute, and that's it. I mean it.
I'll take no longer than that. My name is Marshall Jones. I'm a parent and a citizen ward. I want to take my stand on the side of these decent women that have spoken to me. I wouldn't have any of these magazines except this one in my house. I wouldn't even have them in a barn, let alone the house. Thank you.
Good. Maybe he's a journalist.